Word of mouth.
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 This is Word of Mouth from NHPR. I'm Virginia Prescott. 36 Senate seats will be decided this election day. We turn now not to a report on the ethics or spending on campaign ads, but other aspects of conduct expected from United States senators. Namely, what kind of hold music is permissible on the phone, how many picture frames are allotted each year, and whether or not senators may continue to get haircuts at the Senate salon once their terms are up. These are some of the rules covered in the Senate Handbook, a 380-page document of policies and regulations that was only recently made public. In addition to somewhat arcane-sounding rules governing office equipment and decor, are restrictions on gifts, flights, another use of taxpayer money. Paul Singer is politics editor at USA Today, which acquired a copy of the Senate handbook and published all but one section online. Paul Singer, welcome to the program.
Thanks a lot, Virginia. I appreciate the invitation.
So why did USA Today go after acquiring the Senate handbook? Curiosity, or were you looking for something more specific?
We did a story a few weeks ago about members of Congress who were using taxpayer funds to travel on charter flights. And our question at that time was, is this allowable? And the answer we got from people was, well, that's governed by the Senate handbook. The rules are in the Senate handbook. And we said, okay, we'd like to see the Senate handbook so that we can compare what we know to what the rules actually spell out and to see if anybody's breaking the rules. At which point we were told, you can't have the Senate handbook. It's not public.
Well, first, what are the rules on charter flights for senators?
Well, they're detailed and specific, but the long and the short of it is you can use a charter flight when basically you can't get from here to there at any kind of other timely and commercially accessible transit. You know, obviously, senators have very busy schedules. The rules make allowance for that, and they say if necessary, because commercial transport is not available or not available within your schedule, then you can go charter, but then there's a whole series of, you know, you can't use the most expensive charter, you can only use certain types of planes, you can only, and the biggest one, you can't use it for campaign purposes. It's only for official purposes, only for official Senate business.
So I'm going to go back to the fact that this has been kept out of the public eye. Not even a copy at the Library of Congress you found at USA Today.
Right.
So how were you able to get a copy?
First of all, I feel stupid. This whole thing makes me feel dumb.
Why is that?
I've been covering congressional ethics for years, and it never occurred to me to ask for this book. I don't know.
Did you even know it existed?
I'm not sure. I mean, people had at various times sent me various bits and pieces of the rules that would govern stories I was working on at the time. But it never dawned on me to go look for the thing. And the Senate has, the Senate Ethics Committee has some stuff, has some manuals and guides on its website. The Senate Rules Committee has some stuff on its website. The House Committee has a House handbook. So it just never dawned on me to ask anybody for this thing. And then finally, you know, when we came around to this, I thought, this is ridiculous. Nobody will give me the book. So I just, you know, found a source who was, I don't think the source knew it was secret either, and they were able to provide us a copy.
What are some of the stranger, and I have to say, almost Byzantine-sounding stipulations?
It very well could have been written out of, you know, the Supreme Soviet Committee of 1935. You know, I mean, it's the Botanic Garden will make available no more than three plants for each senator's office, three plants at a time, that is, and to be maintained by the Botanic Gardens. My favorite is the sheets of paper. Each member, each senator is provided blank office paper based on a calculation, based on the population of their state, 1 1/3 sheets of paper for each adult constituent in the state. I mean, really, like, it is totally some kind of Byzantine Soviet era manual for running an organization.
There are rules about what kind of curtains you can choose. If you choose to fly a flag outside of your office, it must come in at night. There's no music allowed before 5 o'clock.
I know, I love that. Yeah, that's the kind of stuff. And of course, we were very pleased to discover that the Senate maintains a piano, which they will loan to senators for events.
Well, thank goodness you know that now. I don't know how you've been covering politics all this time without that.
And keep in mind, that means the taxpayers are paying to maintain a piano, and the taxpayers are paying somewhere for a piano tuner, because that thing gets rolled around the Capitol complex all the time.
So what are the chances that incoming senators read this?
Hopefully slim to none. My assumption is that's why they have chiefs of staff who run their offices. Now, I will say there are sections of it that will be very important. There's a whole section on incoming and outgoing senators. So, you know, if you're an incoming senator, what is your budget? How much are you allowed to use to hire people? That kind of stuff, I suspect they would at least take a glance at. But, you know, Senate offices run like small businesses, and the senator runs like a CEO, operates like a CEO. They probably are not down in these kind of weeds. They've hired chiefs of staff to manage that process for them.
As you read through some of the more, I'm going to say, inane specs in the handbook, like there's one explicitly forbidding senators from using appropriated funds for holiday cards. Mm-hmm. One can't help but wonder, you know, which senator was this rule made for?
Right. It's a really good question. You're exactly right. That is exactly what raises your eyebrows. As you see these things, they say, you know, you can't buy gifts for people with your official office account, to which the reaction ought to be, yeah, duh, of course you can't. But at some point, they decided they had to put this in writing. And it also makes you wonder, Virginia, whether that's why this thing has not been public all this time, that they just didn't want to sort of open the floodgates of questions about exactly why they have these stupid rules.
Well, and their regulations there on typewriters and microfiche, how often do you think this is actually updated?
We're talking about the U.S. Senate. It's entirely possible they still have typewriters and microfiche. Keep in mind that they don't. They're still not required to file their campaign finance reports electronically in the Senate. They can still do them on paper because, the Senate likes to maintain its prerogatives, one of which is to make this stuff as hard to access as possible. One of the reasons why this rule book has never been public is because the Senate doesn't like making things public, period, end of sentence.
Overall, Paul Singer, does looking at this Senate handbook, does it reveal anything about our country or the way our government functions for you?
What it reveals to me more than anything else is just how shy the Senate is about explaining how it operates to the American people. Because, in fact, there are extraordinarily detailed, extraordinarily Byzantine rules for almost everything. And the Senate's fear, I believe, is that once we see the rules, we will be able to ask them more questions about whether they're complying with the rules. And that is a question they don't want to answer. What the handbook tells me more than anything else is that they actually do operate with structure. They just prefer we don't know what it is.
The Black Box of the Senate with Paul Singer. Thank you very much for joining us.
My pleasure, Virginia. Thanks for having me.
Paul Singer is politics editor at USA Today, which recently acquired and published nearly all of the 380-page Senate handbook. There's a link at wordofmouthradio.org to scroll through its arcane edicts for yourself. And we move from implausible Senate rules to pure fantasy. Up next, book critic Lev Grossman explains why the turn of the millennium ushered fantasy from Nerdsville to the mainstream. We'll unleash the dragons when Word of Mouth continues.